The Living Color und Asshole aus dem 2009 erschienenen Album The Chair in the Doorway. Now you guys took a break from 95 to 2000, then you jumped back into the business, which had changed over those 5 years, right? I think when you did your 2003 album, everything was different from 1995 or something like that, because the music industry kind of like started crumbling, started falling
imploding.
Down. Yeah. So how did you deal with that? Was it hard for you guys to adapt? Because, I mean, a musician nowadays, so many musicians I know nowadays, they are so different from what a musician used to be in the 90s, you know? They do their crowdfunding campaign on their own. They're their own managers. They sell their own. They have to do everything just to make a living, you know? How hard was it for you to adapt to a new situation?
We're still doing it.
Well, you know, it takes time. You know, it's like the band was very successful in a time when the industry was supporting bands.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had, you know, a system that was in place to support the artists. You actually had an A&R department where people would actually be there to listen to, you know, help you with your songs and place you with, you know, with the right people to try to get it out. Well, that's all gone now.
Yeah.
And realistically, it's just kind of hit the shank in a sense where, like you said, people have to do stuff themselves. We came from an era and we're blessed to be able to have the success at that particular time, you know, as a black band, you know, playing to the audiences that we're playing to. You fast forward that, the plates shifted a little bit.
Yeah.
And as we got, as now we're older, but still, you know, more, you know, we're still engaged in what's going on individually. As we collectively got back together, we had to realize where our footing was to you know, on the, not on the, you know, on all different senses going on. Like what's the direction to go in? What are we trying to say? You know, you don't want to just kind of like jump on some sort of scene that's going on to be hip or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and we found ourselves in a place where we had each other to navigate with, but we also needed to look at other, people that could possibly help us out. It takes time. It's hard for one person to walk in a straight line, never mind four.
Yeah.
But over time, we managed to assist, you know, we managed to get on our feet and do things. But, you know, look at where we are. Look at where we are right now in 2016. And sometimes, you know, if you keep that shirt long enough in your closet, it becomes fashionable again.
That's true.
You know, to a certain degree. And right now, some of the problems will always remain the same. To a certain degree, where a band that speaks about certain things where other people were cautious of.
Yeah.
For example, when 9/11 happened, there were bands that were afraid to talk about some of the issues that were going on at that time. Living Color, in a sense, was one of the bands. We wrote a song called "Flying," that talked about those issues in a time where, you know, it was patriotic America going on, and don't say anything about the country and be, you know, proactive in what's going on, in a sense. But we've always been a band to try to just, you know, it's like the news with a beat. You try to present things.
It's like Public Enemy or hip hop or blues back then you
want to do it without waving a flag. You want it to be natural and organic, and you don't want to, you know, but you do have to mark the moment, in a sense, and hopefully you look back and reflect, like, and say, okay, we're in 2016 now. As I look back at what we did in 2000, from 2000 to 2005, in those 5 years, you know, I'm still proud of the things that we did, no matter whether it was functional or dysfunctional to somebody else. To us, it was a statement that was made collectively, and I'm proud of it. So
I think that there are advantages to these new times as well, right? Because you just mentioned the A&R guys who are trying to help a band, but at the same time, they kind of like to force bands into certain boxes sometimes. And I've read a thing that you said about your band that I really liked, because you said that your band was like a band without country for a while, because people tried to put you into boxes they didn't understand, and maybe it was too innovative for them and too new, you know. And I think in 2016, that's the beauty of the new situation. Bands can probably do whatever they want a bit more than in the 90s when they were, you know, when they started to have success and they were forced into boxes. I think that may be one of the advantages of a music industry that doesn't function anymore.
There's more of an immediacy, I think, now with music. I'm sorry. There's more of a
a more visceral response. That you can make a record, you can make any kind of song at any point in time and get it out into people's hands mm-hmm. immediately.
Yeah.
That you eliminate the middleman.
Yes.
Just excuse my pun.
wubble, wubble, wubble.
Dee-wee-dee-wee-dee.
Between record companies sort of looking at their bottom line and what people want to hear.
Yeah.
So if we are, and I feel like we are closer to an audience at this point than we were maybe back in the day, because we didn't have, there was several filters and gates that we had to get through in order for things to happen. With a song like, with an album like Vivid, you know, in as much as it was our first foray into the music business, there was a bunch of stuff that people were trying to figure out as to what it was that we needed to be and how we needed to be.
Yeah.
So you could go from a song like I Want to Know to Cult of Personality to Middleman to What's Your Favorite Color?
Yeah.
And people still scratch their heads.
Yeah,
and then,
it's different styles, right?
So, but the next record is like, okay, so we got to hone in on what you guys were and what you guys did and what was your success. Okay, give us another Cult of Personality. And we didn't, if it wasn't right, we weren't going to do it.
Yeah. And I thank you for that.
Right.
No, really. I really appreciate that, because that's what made Living Color one of my favorite bands, you know, because there's always a song on a record that you didn't expect to sound the way it sounds. And the combination, I came from a heavy guitar band when I was listening to your music for the first time. And I was so pleased with songs like Solace of You popping up, you know, you'd be like, oh, you can do that with a guitar as well.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be all the time. But I mean, come on. And then I listened to Type or songs like that, which were the heavier ones, and I loved them for that. So that's what I've always loved about your music.
Yeah, we bounce around. You know, I mean, part of it is like we grew up listening to bands like Led Zeppelin. Like we listened to records like the White Album.
Yeah,
like bands like, you know, Sly and the Family Stone. There's a Riot going on. Things like Electric Ladyland from Hendrix.
Ah, lovely.
And so there's.
And we also listen to Rufus and Chaka Khan, and to
hip hop, obviously,
and, you know, and for that matter, listening to the Mahavishnu Orchestra, listening to King Crimson, you know, all of these different things, you know, they just kind of melted our brains.
Yes,
and so when we approaching it was really not about, okay, this is, you know, it was like song to song. The song would almost dictate what the feeling and what the vibe would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we kind of went, that's why Broken Hearts, it sounds the way it sounds. Because it's like, oh man, you know, because, you know, we used to, our rehearsal space was like a laboratory. Mm-hmm. So it was like, hey man, hey, let's do a country western song and put hip hop beats.
Yeah,
you know,
wow.
Let's give it a go. You know, like the song.
Started bubbling. And then it's going to be a good song.
Like Love Raises Ugly Head. Actually, we used to play it fast. And then one day I said, yo man, let's slow it down and play it like a Sly Stone song.
Oh, right.
So we broke the tempo down and the song suddenly came to life. It actually worked.
Right. Yeah.
But for us, you know, like songs like Go Away coexist with songs like Nothingness, which coexist with
Postman.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and the other thing that's weird is that so much of what we did has this eerie resonance. Like Funny Vibe is like the very first.
Yeah.
I count it as the very first Living Color song.
It was written before Living Color, right? When you were a jazz fan, kind of.
It was written like in the early stages. It was the first thing with lyrics. Like I Want to Know was actually an even earlier song, but that was written, I was part of another band.
Yeah.
And it was like my contribution to that.
Yeah.
But Funny Vibe is actually the first, like, Living Color song. And it came out from just a complete visceral experience that happened. And a lot of what Vivid is like, it's almost like a coming-of-age story.
Yeah.
It's like almost like a diary of living in New York City.
Yeah. And it really, I think it not only changed my life, it changed so many lives of listeners and the lives of so many musicians. Because back then, in the late 80s, early 90s, people didn't think it was possible to cross over between genres like hip hop and rock music, you know?
Well, that was.
People were not thinking about that before.
I think that was that you know, we were talking about earlier about the gatekeepers and about the people who were listening, who decided what needed to be, where it needed to be, and there were these stratifications. This is where R&B goes, this is where rock goes, and this is where jazz goes, and this is where, you know. But we said, you know, we listen, like, I would never relegate it to one station on a dial, you know. No offense to this radio station, I mean, but we flip around, and I flip from the oldie station that's playing, you know, Chicago, and then go to the R&B station and listen to, you know, Al Green to Key Sweat, mm-hmm. and then even within the context of all that stuff, that you're not relegated to anything, and that that you have some sort of freedom in that, and that nobody can tell you how to listen to what you need to listen to.
You know, we were forged also by independent DJs.
Yeah,
like a DJ like Frankie Crocker,
mm-hmm.
or a DJ like Scott, you know,
Scott Muni,
you know. Ken Daschow,
yeah.
Like these are DJs on the radio stations. They would play what they wanted to play. They were like sort of like I would listen to WNEW,
yeah,
and I would hear James Brown, Papa Don't Take No Mess, and then hear the Allman Brothers, you know, and then hear Zeppelin, and then hear Black Sabbath, yeah. And that's what they did. Like the DJs, hey, you know, Frankie Crocker broke Prince in New York, and when I Want to Be Your Lover, he played that song like once every half hour.
Oh, wow.
He broke Chic and then broke Rapper's Delight in New York.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the kind of, and he was sort of a maverick, and he got in trouble. You know, he was fired like 3 times. They had to rehire him because he was so popular, you know.
But that's a nice story. I didn't expect the radio DJs to be an inspiration, to have been an inspiration for Living Color.
Yeah, you know, there was a point in time when radio was freeform.
Yeah.
When FM radio particularly was freeform, whereas like where AM radio was stratified and it had to be a certain way and put this way. When FM radio first came on, it's like, okay, I can play a whole album. Yeah. And I can play side A of the White Album. And there was DJs that were doing that, and like against, you know, the rules for playing music, as you had to play the single, and you had to give the news, you had to give the weather, and then go back to music, where they would be like, I'm gonna play this record all day long over and over again.
Yeah.
That was before the advent of that Son of Satan, Lee Abrams.
I just want to say part of what you were saying politically about the situation in America lends itself to the things the guys were just talking about with radio. Part of what's going to break some of that system is the free-form radio concept is how society really was too at that time for us, which is no longer. We grew up not locking our doors and jamming in our parents' basements and lots of cool clubs to play in, to audition. Fortunately for us, we had CBGBs, we had venues we can play in and jam in, club owners that we knew on a personal basis. So when I listen to the guys talk about it, and you think about your first question, how the interview began, that's also part of the problem.
Yeah.
Although we have this really amazing technology, we've seemed to also become a bit isolated.
Yeah.
And things have become really more sort of stiff.
In narrowed into business. A certain corner.
I love the startup companies. I love people can do the things that themselves, but I also missed being able to just walk into something.
Yeah.
Walk into a venue, walk into an art gallery, walk into see a band jamming.
Yeah.
And those kind of things are kind of not
and watching a concert without using the little display of your smartphone. Yeah. Right?
I mean, it's kind of funny. Doug and I were just playing with one of our good friends, Bernard Fowler, singer, and someone walked up front with a camera, and he just said, you know, he was really gentle about it, but he just said, you know, put that away and experience the concert instead of showing it to your friends later or streaming it live. Why don't you just put that down?
I mean, the sound and video quality of these things, it's bad anyhow,
well,
right?
Regardless, Bernard's point was you're taking away the experience of, you know, of the whole vibe of that. So you should try to enjoy it, you know. So now that I have my shaft, he's playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Private concert for all you listeners. Corey Glover.
Hey, no!
And Vernon Reed.
Doug and I are going to look at the West.
Come on, man. Give me some love, brother.
Always thought that our relationship was cool. You play the role of Eric, said you knew I always play the fool. Now something different, I don't know the reason why. Whenever we separate, I almost wanna cry. Again, love rears up its ugly head. So even when I come home late, she don't complain or call much. So as a consequence, I don't go out at all. All my friends are frightened. They don't know what's going on. See, they think she put a spell on me, and now my mind is gone. Oh, no, 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 not that again. No, no. As they play that wedding march, I'm in a black tuxedo with my collar full of starch. She looks as lovely as she's ever gonna get, and I wake up from this nightmare in a pool of sweat.
Beste Band der Welt, alter Verwalter. Living Color mit Cult of Personality nochmal. Guys, I just wanted to thank you for visiting me. It was one of the best moments in my entire life. Let's put it that way. It really was. Thank you guys for visiting.
Thanks for having us.
I hope you come back to Berlin as soon as the album is finished, and you're going to promote that album.
Next year.
You know where we are right now.
You come back here as well.
You come back right here.
Absolutely.
I want to see you again.
Straight up.
Come down tonight. You'll hear some of the stuff from the night.
Oh, right.
From the New Yorker tonight.
So you're going to road test some. some of the new material?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Okay, cool.
Berlin's the perfect place for it.
Yes. So thank you for visiting Living Color Band bei mir. 030-2000-9000 ist die Nummer zum Glück. Ruft an für die Tickets. Thank you guys. Bye.
Bye.